It's time for Ceasefire, hosted by Clive Finder. Now, on News Talk 920 and FM 96.5 KVEC. Now your host, Clive Finder.
Welcome to the latest edition of Ceasefire. I'm your host, Clive Pinder, and for our regular listeners and newcomers, this is the show where we have conversations, not confrontations, about local issues that are exercising the minds of residents across the county. Today, we are talking about parking. Now, in all honesty, this is a subject that I've tried to avoid because, in my humble opinion, I think that the county has some far more serious issues to deal with. But as we'll learn today, this has become quite a hot topic, not just in Paso Robles, where we're going to be focusing on because of our two guests, but also for those of you who follow the parking issue right the way across the county, and especially in San Luis Obispo. Today, I'm very grateful to have two people who are literally deep in the mire of this issue up in North County. We have Ty Lewis, who is currently the city manager of Paso Robles. Before that, many of you will know Ty as the chief of police of Paso Robles, embedded in the community, has probably been involved in this issue both as chief of police and then a city manager as much as anybody has done. On the other side, we have Jennifer Roush-Cloth. I'm going to let Jennifer introduce herself, but Jennifer is here as the representative of the group of residents that have recently collected signatures to try and get the issue of parking on a referendum in November's elections. And I'll let Jennifer explain how we get there. So just to remind you, this is Ceasefire. I'm here talking about parking across the county, but especially in North County and Paso Robles. And I'm here with Ty Lewis and Jennifer Roush-Cloth. Ty and Jennifer, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Clive. Appreciate the invitation.
Thank you. So, as usual, this isn't gotcha journalism. I always try and present our guests with a kind of discussion guide so they can come prepared. The first question I'm going to ask, and I'm going to actually give it to Jennifer, was really, Jennifer, if you could just give our listeners a very short potted history of how parking has become such an issue up in Paso Robles.
Well, first off, I'm Jennifer Roush-Cloth, and I am one of the owners of Park Cinemas, the movie theater in downtown Paso. And I am one of the proponents of the parking referendum, as well as the facilitator of the meetings and things like that. So thank you for having me.
No, thank you, and thank you
and
for that introduction.
As far as parking goes.
Yeah, thank you for that introduction. Thank you for that introduction. It was remiss of me not to ask you to do that, so thank you.
No worries. So as far as parking has been around for a while, right? So there's been a lot of situations, a lot of questions, a lot of truths and untruths, a lot of stories. Unfortunately, it's gotten to the point now that we just want to be able to be heard. And that's where the citizens of Paso Robles, and actually many others as well, have come forward and said, hey, we need to do something about this. We don't like what's currently happening. And it's not helping us, and that's where we're at.
Cool. Jennifer, can you just go back a few years just to, I mean, as you, I know that you and your family and the cinema, as I call it, has been a central part of downtown. In fact, arguably was kind of the anchor tenant of the new downtown. Can you just perhaps go back to the very beginning of why people in Paso, including, I think, the Main Street Association, decided that there needed to be some sort of formalized parking program downtown, whereas before that it was kind of a free-for-all. Is that correct, going back to 2017, 2018? Can you give us the history from your point of view, and then Ty, who has been involved with it from the beginning, can perhaps go over that, just either confirm or add some nuance to it?
So, sure. So the issue actually goes back a lot more years than just 2017, 2018. So a long time ago, when I was young, and before the theater was even built, there were parking meters downtown. And that's, you know, those old quarter things, you know, those silver ones that you put quarters in.
Yeah.
And actually, Main Street was the first to get those taken out. Over time, the theater was asked to come downtown and to be the anchor, so to speak, because a theater will bring people down. So, you know, the saying is build it and they will come. That's pretty much what happened. we were looking at different locations, and we were asked by Main Street, and we were asked by the city in many different ways, you know, say, hey, can you guys consider coming down here? And we did. And with that, now you have, of course, the city as it looks now. So you have a lot of buildings, you had a lot of things that weren't there before, and now you have a really vibrant downtown. And so the next piece about parking and Main Street, I'm sorry to say, but Main Street was never for paid parking, ever. And I think that's one of the untruths that are coming forward. A lot of people are saying, oh, well, Main Street wanted it, Main Street wanted it. And I'm sorry, but that's not true. There was some question as to getting help with parking and a parking program at one point, and that's where Main Street stepped in and had conversations. They had their merchants, everybody involved. The city had plenty of people. Also, at that time, I believe there was even a parking commission that was discussing all of this. And so that was way before. And I do have to say that, yeah, the Main Street has never been in favor of a paid parking program at all.
Okay, so let's jump forward to when a sort of formal parking program was put in. Can you just summarize that for us?
So my understanding, I wasn't here at that point. My understanding is that paid parking came in. We had free parking to work for a few hours in order to provide movement, supposedly. I guess there was a lot of different questions, and there was different people that were brought in, and I believe that's when, like, the Julie Dixon came in, and that's when all these reports were being done, and that was when tons of questions and answers and all kinds of things, all kinds of different options were being put out there. At that time, my understanding is that the city council decided that they were going to do a paid parking program. I believe it did start with the 2 free hours, and then it was paid after that. They put in the kiosks, et cetera, et cetera. And then from there, it's just become a big ordeal because it's been 1 minute, it's making money, 1 minute it's not. 1 minute we need to have the kiosk, then the kiosks don't work. You know, there's all those questions and concerns that go along with it. The idea of other options have been thrown out there so many different times in taking out paid parking and providing other types of options. Okay. And that's just where we're at this point, we want to be heard.
Right.
And in order to do that, that's where the referendum comes in.
Sure. I believe that it kind of came to a head when the city decided that they were going to take away 2 hours, 2 free hours parking and start parking from kind of minute one. So that's a good background.
It actually...
Go on.
Can I just...
Sure.
On that, it actually started when they were going to still keep 2 free hours at one point, but they were going to raise the price of the hours after. And then from there, it went back to then we'll go back to the way it used to be. And then from the next step was now we're going to stop free parking altogether and charge.
Okay. And
so there's been 3 different changes in the
scenarios,
last year.
Right. And then it became a legal issue. But before we get onto that, Ty, is there anything you wanted to add to Jennifer? As I say, you've kind of been involved in this with 2 different hats.
Yeah. So I think, fairly accurate description of the timelines. I would add just a little bit to it. I think that the issue of parking, as Jennifer pointed out, has been going back, decades. The city has undertaken 2 major studies on the downtown parking issue in the 2000s, maybe the end of the 90s, into the 2000s. At the behest, I had the ability to go back and look through some of the archives, and you can, see these studies. Kim Lee Horn, and there are some others that did studies that at the behest of downtown business owners, from what I understand, that were struggling with the turnover issue. Both of those studies said, we don't have a space problem. We have a management problem. Most of the issues, according to those studies, were related to the downtown employees that were parking there that were likely taking up a large amount of space. That's what those two centered on. And then around 2018 or so, the then city manager approached me and said that the city council and the downtown business owners are interested in coming up with some sort of parking solution. And I was charged as a commander with the time of bringing back information to the city to begin to develop some sort of plan.
So what was the underlying problem, as I understand it? And sorry, actually, Ty, if you could just put your just a little closer to the mic.
Yeah, you bet.
Thank you. Was that actually what was happening, and this is my simple little way of looking at it, is that there, around the center of town, there were retail businesses, if you like, on the ground floor, and then upstairs there were more office businesses, and what was happening, and restaurants, and what was happening is that people were coming in, parking there for all day or all shift, and that was preventing, if you like, customers coming downtown, and that was the initial issue. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, I think your observations are right on the spot. You know, if anybody that's been to downtown Paso Robles can see the various businesses that are down there. Some of them are retail, some of them are restaurants. All kinds of, you know, it's very diverse ecosystem, so to speak, of businesses down there. And the biggest driver was that it would take often an absorbent amount of time to circle the park, circle the downtown in order to find a parking spot. And that's what was the driver of the, the movement to come up with some sort of solution.
Sure. I mean, it's worth saying now that a group of residents and a group of businesses, recently they wrote an opinion letter in the press. For those who are following this kind of became legal. I don't want to get into the details of that, but where we are right now is downtown businesses have collected nearly 2,500 signatures. We'll come on to that. I'm asking for this issue to be put on the ballot. But my first question, Jennifer, just again as an outsider, is it seems strange to me that this is an issue that had to become, if you like, a city issue. I mean, if the problem, and if you don't believe or if you don't agree with me, the problem was that there was a group like 20% of people, if you like, were taking up 80% of the parking spaces. Is that not the sort of issue that the downtown businesses could have resolved themselves rather than having to get, quote-unquote, sort of the town hall involved?
Yes, it's very much something that they could have handled on their own. And I know there was a lot of talk about what to do and how to do it. And then at some point, the city was approached by, I think, one or two people. And from there, it developed, and they took over at that point. And as to Ty's, how he got involved, I can't answer that. He's the only one who can. I wasn't around at that point. But yes, the idea is that we could have easily come together and had a resolution done a lot differently.
Okay, so perhaps we'll come back to that towards the end, because one of the questions I want to ask is how the two of you who kind of represent both sides of the issue would solve it, because it's just become a very sort of, in my opinion, I don't like to use the word ugly episode, really, which perhaps underlies a deeper issue. So, Ty, if we can come back to that, but have their circumstances changed between 2017, when the program was initially in, and today, where we're now in this very contentious issue of whether we have paid parking or not, where it's fair to say that two members of the city council think we should basically should either keep it as it was or get rid of it altogether, and three members of the council want to sort of progress with paid parking with a view perhaps to a downtown parking structure. Has anything changed in between 2018 and 2024 to cause this conflict?
I would say that, you know, Jennifer's kind of rundown of the progress in the last, I don't know if progress is the right word, but the evolution of the parking program between 2 hours free to paid parking to raising rates. In addition, I think probably at least, you know, and this is anecdotal at best, but my observation is that, you know, we have a lot different business profile than we did 5 years ago. So, you know, now we have down, you know, some estimates, you know, are estimating we have 2 million people visiting downtown, every year. We have Michelin star nodded restaurants. We have dozens of wineries that have opened up that weren't there, along with new business owners. And some of them don't have the historical knowledge that Jennifer and others do regarding this. So I think that some of the perceptions might have shifted a little bit. But in general, I think that, you know, some of the same things that you know, existed then. You know, the geography hasn't changed. The amount of parking spaces haven't changed. The city's financial status regarding being able to fund a parking structure hasn't changed. So some of the, you know, underlying assumptions are still there.
Jennifer, from your point of view as kind of representative of the business, am I right in what would good look like for you, Main Street Downtown Association, and is there almost, I mean, is there a clear majority of people that would support that position? What would good look like for you?
So, Clay, first off, I do need to say that this is not Main Street. I do not represent Main Street in this conversation.
Yep.
Main Street's a nonprofit organization. Okay, so I need to make sure that that's put out there.
Thank you.
The other piece to that is those merchants that we talk to every day, they're doing so much better without having paid parking downtown. So our position is something else. That's what our position is. Paid parking causes so many problems downtown. It's causing so many problems for our merchants. A lot of them were closing at random hours, or they weren't able to pay the bills. And in the last 2 months, with parking being on hold, it's amazing what kind of just a difference it's really brought. You know, there's a lot more people coming back downtown. There's a lot, the people's attitudes are changing. They're having fun again. They're talking again. Our conversation is no longer about paid parking and how does it work and do I need to worry about setting my alarm, and I can't see the kiosk. I can't read it. There's too much sunshine. I don't understand. Where am I supposed to park? What's free? What's not? Da 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 da.
Right.
Those were my conversations with my client, my guest, you know, every day.
Okay.
And we used to get blamed for it constantly.
Right.
And trying to explain to people that the merchants downtown are not in control of paid parking. We're not in control of any of that. We're only in control of our, you know, individual businesses. And yes, we'll try to help as much as we can, but we don't want that to affect our business. And over time, that's truly what happened, is it affected our businesses.
Right.
And so, then from there, you know, I started getting, you know, guests coming from, you know, locals to out of town, you know, kind of close. And then you know, start working your way out. And people just were so confused and so frustrated and just throw up their arms almost and say, I'm not going anymore.
Right.
I can't keep dealing with all of the possible issues.
Right.
You know, what happens if I get a ticket? What happens if I put in the wrong number to my license plate? Oh, by the way, you put in the wrong number to your license plate and there's nothing you can do. Well, yes, there is stuff you can do, but then they're asking me.
Right. So,
they're
Jennifer, I'm going to...
So it changes the conversation.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to... clearly, you know, nobody is going to like parking, paid parking, if they can get it for free. I just want to remind everybody that Ty Lewis, as the city manager, serves at the pleasure of the city council. And as such, so his job is to advise the city council, if I'm right in saying, but also to implement what they decide to do. Ty, I just want to come back to this issue. Let's just go over some other things. Online shopping has gone up 56% in the time paid parking has been. So we can see from San Luis Obispo that their correlation is not causation, but there is a remarkable correlation between downtown businesses dropping off and parking becoming more expensive. So that's one issue. We've also been through COVID. More and more people are working from home. So I'm assuming the pressure on businesses that were there all the time, they're presumably, they could easily work from home. There's this thing called Zoom. So explain to me, Why the council, from your point of view and your bosses, the city council, seem to be so reluctant to get rid of paid parking? Why not just go back to how it was?
Well, I think that the issue from my perspective, having talked to them and talked to others in the community that are, you know, well entrenched in this, is when you look at the options that are available to impact paid parking, or excuse me, to impact, you know, turnover and parking downtown, is, you know, you have, I think it was mentioned early on, you have the option of, you know, building a parking structure, which estimates we've gotten in using City Hall, for example. The parking lot there is big enough to construct a parking site. We have some very, you know, strong issues related to seismic activity, liquefaction, So to be able to build a parking structure just on downtown where we in the City Hall parking lot where we own it, you're looking at anywhere from $40,000 to $60,000 per space.
So let me, sorry, just to jump in, but why, I mean,
I'm getting, yeah.
Parking just seems to be fine as it is. I mean, business is up. Nobody's complaining about parking. We're still getting, you know, revenue, visitor numbers are going through the roof. So to an outsider, this kind of seems like a solution in search of a problem.
I don't think that's the case. I think that from my perspective, all the conversations, as Jennifer indicated, is they want some sort of parking program. And so when you look at the, and that's why I was being able to, trying to run down the options for you. So
right.
Parking structure, it's going to cost you big dollars, and it would likely cause some sort of general obligation bond, which homeowners would pay for. You have the option of implementing a timed parking program downtown, which the only way to enforce that is through citations, which doesn't necessarily leave a good taste in right. residents or visitors. Or you have some sort of parking program that, from the council's perspective, that needs to be revenue neutral, because that was one of the things that the parking proponents, or opponents, I should say, pointed to it with the old system, was that we were losing money every year, we're never paying it off, and so it was one of the arguments to get rid of the paid parking program as ineffectual. And so those are really your three options to manage parking.
Sorry, thanks, Ty. So those three, are those three options that you would accept? Is there a fourth that you think is not being considered, Jennifer?
I know there's been a lot more talk and a lot more options that have been provided, like in the ad hoc committees and things. But again, on my end, I am not, I don't know. I would have to say from my own points of view, because I am not, you know, a parking person who can really make those decisions. But there has been a lot of talk as to other options that do not require paid parking.
Okay, so Ty, let me just, come up with three. Let me just ask you a question. It's now, 6 or 7 months since there's been no parking plan downtown, 4 or 5 months?
Yeah.
Is there a problem with parking downtown in those 4 or 5 months? Is anybody complaining? Has there been any issues?
You know, it's very much like opinions about how business and everything is doing. It depends on who you ask and
right.
when you ask them and the way you ask it.
Right.
I regularly hear from people. In fact, just walking in the building, you and I heard somebody say complaining about the parking.
I think that was, to be fair, that was San Luis Obispo. But yeah, because they've gone with a parking situation. So, yeah.
So it's a damned if you are, a damned if you're not when it comes to parking. It's very controversial, as you pointed out. Nobody wants to pay for it, and I understand right. it. In the end, is it going to, I do agree with the notion that, hey, if, you know, is the juice worth the squeeze with this? If the community doesn't want parking, then they don't want parking.
Okay. So this is Ceasefire. We're coming up to the end of the first half of the show. My guests are Ty Lewis, the city manager of Paso Robles, and Jennifer Rauch-Kloth, who is representing a group of businesses in Paso Robles who are trying to reconfigure, if you like, downtown parking, or even get rid of it altogether. We'll be back after these messages, and we'll look at how things are at the moment and what might change and what the businesses would like to see, and give Ty an opportunity to come back with that. So thank you for listening to Ceasefire. We'll be right back after these messages from our sponsors.
Catch the full episode of Ceasefire on the KVEC Podcast Network. More Ceasefire is coming up on News Talk 920 and FM 96.5 KVEC. Building bridges, not burning bridges. Ceasefire is back. Here's Clive Pinder on News Talk 920 and FM 96.5 KVEC.
Welcome back to another edition of Ceasefire. I'm your host, Clive Pinder. Today we're talking parking across SLO County generally and Paso Robles and North County specifically. My guests, and I'm as always grateful to two people who are on opposing sides of the issue, but have agreed to come in and talk about this civilly and in a positive conversation, even though perhaps they have differing points of view. So we have Ty Lewis, who is the city manager of Paso Robles, and prior to that was the chief of police of Paso Robles, and Jennifer Rauch Kloth. I always get my names wrong. Apologies, Jennifer. who is representing a group of businesses in downtown who are trying to stop paid parking coming in and explore other options. So in the second half of the show, I want to talk a little bit about data and then see if we can't find some solutions, and also talk a little bit about the issue of referendum, which I think goes down to one of the issues underlying this, at least in my point of view. So ignorance is bliss. I live east of Templeton. My wife, who is a fifth generation Paso Robles, my mother-in-law lives arguably downtown, or at least up on the hill above town, has been actively involved in Paso Robles sort of Main Street Association as a volunteer, etc. As I said in the first half of the show, to me this seems like a solution brought in by town hall, city hall, trying to do the right thing, but in now search of a problem. And I wonder, I go downtown 5 or 6 times a week, both in the mornings, the afternoons, and evenings. And I never have a parking problem. I know that there are some people who have difficulty walking a great distance, but the parking zone is basically 2 blocks. I mean, actually, the only time I ever have a parking problem, to be fair, is when I come to the Park Cinemas, which I do regularly, and I love going there. And the biggest pain for me there was parking, because I needed to, well, I had to make sure I parked a block away. But do you, Jennifer, do you have any data to show? You've got the data that you've suggested that in the last 4 or 5 months, when there's been free parking for all, that businesses have seen a great uptick in business. Do you have any hard data on that, or is that just what I would call anecdotal from you talking to your sort of coalition, if you like, of businesses?
So data specific, we do it every day regarding the Park Cinemas, regarding the theater. And so our numbers show over time when paid parking was there, we were actually down 20%. Atascadero at the same time. So this is always a question, like, how can you really give us numbers and say that it's, you know, parking related or this related or that related? And the way we can say that is we literally have numbers for every theater. And so we can compare those theaters and what they're playing with what we're playing and showing a growth and go from there. So we can actually show that we were down 20% on a regular basis. And a lot was going to Atascadero. Now, since the parking has been on hold, we have actually increased 30%. Right. So we were down 20 and now we're up 30.
Right. So that,
and that is even with the industry being down.
Right.
So there's always those.
That's a hard data.
Well.
That's a hard data point, Ty. Do you have any data? I'm going to be a little unfair on someone who's not here to answer themselves, but I remember sitting in a meeting when one of the councillors basically said that they had walked around every store and looked at how many were in the store and that were empty parking spaces. I mean, that's just not how you do data collection and making decisions on that sort of anecdotal evidence. So do you have any hard evidence to support putting in paid parking? Other than that, well, yeah, let's leave it at that.
Well, I can tell you, you know, I obviously have access to all the tax revenue data that comes into the city, and it's broken down by zones. So I can see throughout the city, you know, any kind of, you know, increases or decreases in tax revenue. Now, that doesn't account for, obviously, cost of rents or employees or materials or any of those things. But prior to the pandemic, I think that you saw, you know, regular increases downtown in tax revenue in the area of 3.5%. Of course, we went into the pandemic, which totally crashed the world. And even through that, I think we saw, you know, about a 20% dip when 2021 or so, when things really shut down.
Right.
And then in 2022 and 2023, we saw, well, excuse me, let me back up, 2022 was the downturn, and then 2021, 2022, we started coming out of it. And we saw eye-popping numbers all throughout while we had, paid parking downtown that showed that, and you can get into whether they were seasonally adjusted or whatever, but restaurants and hotels were up 46% over pre-pandemic numbers. The downtown in general has probably seen 30% increases in those. So, you know, just from a hard data point on tax revenue and collection, those numbers have not dropped and don't seem to be impacted one way or another, but positively. And not saying we couldn't have got more or not. I'm not speculating there. But the tax revenue certainly would support that through parking, that it did not have a negative impact, but a positive impact.
So that, I mean, I believe that the sort of incendiary moment was when the council decided to go to paid parking from minute one.
Yeah.
Because you're quoting numbers where there were 2 hours of free parking.
Yep.
So arguably, most people could come down, have a meal, and leave without paying, et cetera, et cetera. Is that fair?
Yeah, and okay. I would say that the Q4 numbers for last year, when we didn't have parking instituted, show about a 2% decrease
in tax revenue. Okay,
yeah.
So again, correlation and but then on the other hand, we have Jennifer and Park Cinemas saying that their numbers went up in that period.
Yeah, and I would go back again to the diverse ecosystem down there. Each business is a little bit different, so there are certain businesses I think that are going to be more.
Right.
Vociferous when it comes to their needs, and I think that everybody has a little bit different circumstance, and so I'm certainly happy for Park Cinemas and their recovery.
Good. Okay. So there seems to be some data. I mean, some is directly correlated, I think, which is the Park Cinema data. The other of it is tax based, and you know, as I said earlier, correlation is not causation, but there is undoubtedly, Ty, a sense amongst a vocal number, whether it's a vocal minority or a vocal majority. But I want to come on to this request for a referendum. I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say I think parking is an issue, but an even bigger issue at the city council is that businesses and voters don't feel they're listened to. And this, in a way, and is a proxy for a general, what I would call a democratic deficit in the minds of people. I mean, we have a city council. The mayor was not elected. He was selected. Two of the four councillors were not elected. They were selected. Now, Chris Bausch has since been elected. But so you've got three people who are sitting in seats that originally they were selected to, not elected to.
Well, I would push back on that. All of them but one have been reelected into their spots, other than the mayor, which was at the time,
yeah,
they had widespread public support.
I could do a whole show on incumbency, but to be selected, it's a lot easier to get elected once you've been selected. But the point is, there's a referendum out there. They collected 2,500. They were invited to go out and collect 2,500, far more than they needed. And they've been told, basically, that for two or three, what I think anybody, well, I don't know if they'd call them petty, but things like the type size wasn't big enough. They didn't validate whether people were being paid to collect. I mean, if I'm just an outstanding bystander, it's like 2,500. Why isn't it just petty to kick that back? Why not just as the city council accept? Look, you know, that's a large number of people. Yes, we'll put it on the ballot. Why, if we know there's a sense of a lack of democracy at city council, why not take this opportunity to give people the chance to vote on something that's clearly exercising a lot of people?
Well, I think that you have a lot packed into one general statement there. So first off, no, it's not petty, because the city clerk is charged with, you know, processing and evaluating these things in accordance with legal help. And the issues, I don't think that the city council or a court or a judge would worry about typeface or fonts or any of those kind of things. Those are what they consider substantial compliance items. And there's plenty of case law out there that shows that those items, you know, shouldn't necessarily, in fact, affect the will of the voters and those seeking referendums. The items that are what are termed substantial or
right.
fatal flaws are things that are just completely omitted from the referendum, including whether or not the volunteers were paid, or whether the signature gatherers were paid or not. And in addition to making sure that the title of the referendum is clearly reflected, so those people that know what they're signing and what they're actually trying to do, not from the status or the viewpoint of those proponents, but from a legal standard, so that people know what they're actually signing and hoping to vote for. And then the last thing that I think is a presumption too is that it must go on the ballot. That is not the only option available to the city or the city council. They can repeal, they can amend, they can do various things aside from putting it on the ballot in order for our constituents to be able to do that. And of course, there's a lot of factors that would direct that, including labor and time and costs associated with it. Okay. There's a lot to unpack with that.
Jennifer, Ty's been very honest there that there are some which I mean in my language are immaterial type size. There are some that are material. Were gatherers paid, and was the title of the referendum clearly stated? What are your thoughts on those reasons?
So as far as the title of the referendum goes, we still stand that what we've written is what we were trying to do. The whole point is to put it, require voter approval of paid parking zones. That's exactly what we want. As far as not having, if anybody's been paid for this, we found out about that after the fact. It is a brand new piece of legislature that came out. We are a few. We're grassroots. We're just people. A lot of us just have jobs or whatever. We're not, attorneys. We're not any of that. And we're trying to do all of this without, I don't know what to say. We just don't know how to do everything.
Sure.
So we did our best.
And
so when we're putting this forward, that's what we're saying.
Okay.
There is no money being collected for this group. This group that's putting this on is just citizens. And so the idea is, and Ty is right in the respect that there's a lot of other options that the city council can do. And that it's certainly very... it's there. They can do all kinds of different things.
Okay.
Our point is that to be heard, we needed to do something.
Okay.
And that was the referendum.
That was the referendum. So I am, because from a ceasefire principle is fact-based journalism as much as possible. I am going to say that I know for a fact, because I have spoken to people, that some people in your group, and I'm not suggesting you or the final arbiters of thing, did take legal advice when they thought about doing a referendum. So if I was your group, I'd probably be having a word with the lawyer who gave me advice that we didn't get it quite right. But Ty also nodded his head when he felt that the need to articulate whether gatherers were paid or not came in later. Do you just want to push back on that? Again, this might not be Jennifer. I think one of the things, and having been an activist myself, is this is not an organized, union or anything. I mean, these are just concerned citizens who perhaps don't have the resources or the organization of City Hall. So do you just want to respond to that, Ty?
Yeah, no, I think that I agree with Jennifer in the sense that this is a very complicated area of law, something where we, sought out the assistance of one of the, premier elections firms in the state to be able to help us understand what needed to be done and how to proceed. It's not often you get a referendum. What I can tell you is early on in the process, within about 3 days of collecting signatures, is that I had this information. I reached out to the proponents and asked to take them to coffee so we could discuss that. I was refused, which I understand the hesitation, the trepidation, but I sent them a follow-up email saying, hey, you should probably seek some better legal advice in these areas, because I think these could cause you problems. I know how hard you're working. I know how much blood, sweat, and tears are in this. But you should, if you really want to be successful, you should probably get some new legal advice or try a new strategy, because in the end, I don't want to see anybody be frustrated, because I have heard those, folks say that their voices aren't being heard.
So, and I, by the way, can validate that, because I know that I had conversations, again, not with Jennifer, to my audience. The times I've spoken to Jennifer, I know that if she is anything, she's 100% authentic and plays, as we say in England, with a straight bat, which means she doesn't try to fool anybody. But I know for a fact that certain people were warned that this referendum request or petition would likely fail on legal grounds, and was told I was basically dismissed. So, but that's in the past. As they say, rules are for the observance of fools and the guidance of wise men. So I think Jennifer's being very honest.
Clive, can I just say something?
Sure, of course.
That?
Yeah, please
we
do.
We did
yeah.
find out, and we did. We heard what Ty had to say, and we heard, but we had already started. And in that, you also have to look at the fact that there's only a certain amount of time that you're able to do any of this.
Right.
And so by the time we've already started doing and collecting signatures, if we were to go backwards, we would have had to start all over again.
Right.
So unfortunately, by doing that, that would have really changed the terms and the timing and all of that kind of stuff, too. So in for us, because, you know, we're declaring a negative in the respect, like, there is no money anywhere.
Right.
There isn't a group, you know, that's actually a licensed group to accept funds. There's none of that.
So
therefore, in our minds, we're like, it would take way too much away
yeah.
from what we've already started doing.
Yeah.
And then from there, like Taya said, the city council is the one who can make these decisions. And
okay, wait a minute.
So wait a minute.
So let me just sorry.
The city
let me.
Clerk comes back and says no. They still have an opportunity to do
So that's my next question, because I think I don't want to argue about what's happened in the past. So Ty, is it within the gift of the council to say, you know what, this petition is not properly formed, but we're still going to put the ballot the question on the ballot?
So the short answer is no. The council does not have the discretion to approve a referendum, move it forward or not if it's fatally flawed. It must be rejected. And there's a reason why the elections code has that there, is because while this is, you know, by, you know, all the people involved in this are good people trying to do good things.
Right.
A lot of communities have, you know, had voter fraud. They've been fooled. Titles are important, signatures are important, and that's the reason why there are such stringent requirements when it comes to these types of referendums. Now, there are other options. There's ballot initiatives, which is very similar but very different also when it comes to this. Now, the city council can make the decision outside of the referendum
yes.
issue to place anything they want on the
right.
ballot. And again, they can make the decision to repeal the ordinance. They can make the decision to continue to pause the ordinance. There's a lot of things, and I can tell you for the purposes of this show that Tuesday, the agenda should be out on Friday, but there are going to be two items on the city council's purview coming up this Tuesday. One is to have as open discussion as they about the options that they have regarding how to make sure that, you know, the voters' voices are heard outside of the referendum process, which could include putting it on the ballot. The second option that's going to be there is the flat option to repeal the ordinance and then, you know, begin some sort of process to work with the proponents or any of the other downtown business owners to be able to find some sort of equitable solution that might meet the business owners' needs.
Well, and that sounds frustrating, having been an elected representative and an activist. I know that City Hall is often has things barriers on their side which make it difficult. But Jennifer, I mean, to Ty's comments about what might happen on, or what will happen by the sound of things, unless anything changes on next Tuesday, how do you feel about those options going forward? I mean, what would you like to see happen moving forward? Let's assume that for legal reasons the petition as presented can't be accepted, but what would you, I think, you know, in credit to you, and I know how hard you've worked, I've heard it from my mother-in-law, to get those petitions, that's an impressive result in a short period of time. What would you like to see happen going forward? What would your appeal be for the city council and the city officers come Tuesday?
So I do need to make clear, this is not my call at this point. You know, this
right.
is something that everyone has been talking about, and based on the signatures and based on the people that have been signing, and that they want it on the ballot. They want to be able to say, hey, we had a vote, we had, you know, our say. And that goes for the other side. It goes for both sides. So some people, and I'm going to put it out there, some people do want some type of a parking program.
Right.
Do they want paid parking? Who knows? Do they don't want paid parking? But they want to be able to say something, just like what you were talking about earlier, of not feeling heard and things like that. I think a lot of it just really comes down to, we need to deal with the issue of paid parking. And how do we do that democratically? How do we do that for everyone to be heard? and that is to put it, you know, on the ballot. And Ty is correct. If, you know, if the referendum is found insufficient, we understand that based on the referendum, they cannot move forward regarding the referendum itself. We completely understand that. But based on the fact that we have so many signatures and people just want to be heard, so that's where it's coming down to now, that a lot of people, you know, we're mm-hmm. asking for the city council to just to put it on the ballot. Now, if they choose to do something different, you know, that's their decision to do something different. And will we work with that? Of course we will.
Okay, so
you know, there's so many people that want something different, and what is that going to look like? I don't know, and I can't speak for everybody with that. You know, that would literally be an individual conversation with every single person. Now, if the city wants that, then I'll go do it.
Sure. Okay. So
you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. So I'm gonna. I'm sorry. We're running out of time here, Jennifer. So I promised this hour would go quickly, and it has. Lots more questions to raise, but we've got literally 2 minutes left. Ty, I'm going to put you a little bit on the spot here. At the end of the day, we vote for elected representatives to take hard decisions. My understanding is that you know, it's a 3-2 vote at the moment. What would your advice be to the city councillors? You're, at the end of the day, it's always the officers that get it in the neck, unfortunately. And I've seen that firsthand. What would your advice? I mean, it's clear that this is an issue. It's clear that there's a sense that people aren't being listened to. I mean, I'm going out alone here. You know, what would your recommend? You're the chief executive officer. I'm on the board member. I want your advice. What would your advice be to the city councillors?
Well, obviously, I try and bring as much information to the council as possible. So I've asked them two questions recently. One is, what problem are you trying to solve? And then, is the juice worth the squeeze?
Okay.
Those two questions. And, you know, depending on how you answer those, you know, that is, you know, those should be the things rattling around in a council member's mind when they're trying to do that. And from my perspective, we have a lot bigger issues that we need to be worrying about. If the community, you know, has taken this much time and effort to come and tell you that they don't want it, that should mean something to you. And we have roads that we need to repair. We have E12 that I hope will get renewed, or we're going to see about a $7 million drop in our budget. And we have $300 million worth of roads that we need to get fixed.
So I think that's probably a good way to leave it. Jennifer, I'm running out of time, so I'm just going to try and step in here and just wrap up the show. First of all, I want to thank Ty Lewis and Jennifer for coming in today. I hope that the city council listen and take what I heard was Ty's very subtle but sage advice, which is, you know, listen to the people. There are bigger fish to fry. At the very least, let's keep things as they are, and let's get some hard data before we push ahead with a program that, from what I've heard and all the anecdotal evidence, and certainly the referendum says, is not something that downtown Paso is looking for. So thanks for listening to Ceasefire. I'm your host, Clive Pinder. Again, thanks to my guest, Ty Lewis. Remember, this goes out on the first Friday of every month and then is repeated on Saturday and then is available on the KVEC podcast. We'll be back with you next month. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Ceasefire, hosted by Clive Pinder. To listen again, get this episode on the KVEC Podcast Network. From News Talk 920 and FM 96.5, KVEC.